Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this episode, we're going to talk about what if you buy a home at the top of the market. And specifically, we're going to look into the real estate cycle and try to figure out where we are in that cycle. So one way to tell whether we're buying a home at a good time or not is to see what the stock market is doing. After all, the stock market reflects earnings expectations 6 months to 24 months in advance. And you could investigate further and look at sectors in which your city, your state has the largest exposure. For example, tech is huge in San Francisco, oil is large in Houston, and banks are ubiquitous in New York City. Now, with the stock market seemingly stuck down 10% in the first quarter of 2018, there is a growing chance that you might be buying at the top of the market this year. Now, exactly what that percentage chance is, nobody really knows, but you can make an educated guess. I'm thinking maybe that chance is about 50% now for expensive coastal city real estate, up from 40% in 2017, and maybe up from just 20% in 2015. Stocks correct swiftly, while real estate corrects slowly until everybody knows real estate is weakening. And then liquidity dries up, there are no more offers, and the floor drops out. Now, if the stock market is correcting, it's time to pay closer attention to any investment you make, especially when it comes to making it with leverage. Leverage is awesome on the way up, but is really, really the killer on the way down. Many normal people, millionaires and billionaires, have gotten slaughtered because they had too much debt on their balance sheets. So what we do know is that the real estate market moves in cycles due to the desire for economic profits. In other words, new construction comes online to meet new demand. Peak new construction tends to occur past peak demand because we know that it takes a while to build a new building. Sometimes it takes 6 months, sometimes it takes 3 years, and it also takes a while to exactly identify when that peak demand is. Many construction companies can't identify it. Oftentimes, they're a little bit too early or a little bit too late. And so when there is past peak new construction over past peak new demand, there ultimately leads to a temporary oversupply and lower prices proceed. Now, this bust phase usually lasts between 1 to 3 years before a price floor is found. And right now, we're clearly in the hypersupply boom phase of the cycle right now. There's a chart in my article that has four phases. One is the recovery phase, two is the expansion phase, three is the hypersupply phase, and four is the recession phase. Now, you want to be hyper diligent in phase three, the hypersupply phase. For me, I am clearly seeing weakness in the rental market in San Francisco. There's clearly weakness in the rental market and the property price market, sale market in New York City. There's clearly weakness in places like Toronto. And then prices in Chicago, I don't know what's going on there, but rental prices are down 15 to 25%. So it's clear that earnings are coming down, which means eventually prices are going to come down. Otherwise, valuations are going to keep on going up, far outstripping job income growth, and that is unsustainable. So know where we are in the cycle. There's another great chart in the post that highlights specific cities in various phases of the cycle. Now, I'm in San Francisco, and there's phase three, which talks about maturing exuberance, which is right before the chart goes down. So that's at the peak level of the chart. So cities in this maturing exuberance level are Austin, Boston, Dallas, East Bay, Manhattan, Miami, Nashville, Portland, San Francisco, San Jose, and Seattle. This is one company's opinion, and I more or less agree with that. And then there are cities in early recovery and ripening recovery stages like Chicago, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, San Antonio, Philly suburbs, and so forth. I think it's really interesting. And if you logically believe that we should shift exposure from late phase markets to early phase markets to earn more money and protect against downside risk, then you would logically sell property in late phase markets and shift that exposure to early phase markets. quite logical, and therefore you should believe in my thesis of investing in the heartland of America and my real estate investing rule called BURL, which stands for buy utility, rent luxury. So rent property in expensive late phase markets and buy property in early phase markets with much higher net rental yields. All right, moving on. Let's say, despite all the signs that the real estate market is at risk of rolling over, you go ahead and buy property with leverage at the top of the market or right when that roller coaster starts declining, and then you lose tons and tons of money. What happens to your mind and to your money? Now, I've got firsthand experience since I bought a Lake Tahoe vacation property only 1 year after the peak. I thought I was getting a good deal, saving about 100 grand or 12%, and then the market started imploding and I lost another 30%. So five things happen. One, you go into denial at first. You're always going to stand behind your decision to buy at the very beginning. Even if you see a neighboring home on the market sit for longer or drop their asking price, you will justify your purchase by saying your home has a better layout, nicer amenities, better curb appeal, whatever. You'll tell yourself that you bought your house for a better lifestyle first and foremost. It's kind of like going out to eat and spending $100 per person for dinner. Of course, you're going to say that steak was a bajillion times better than a $3 In-N-Out burger or whatever, because you have to justify your decisions. Now, after about a year, the elation of owning your home fades a little bit. It's similar to the fading elation of buying a new car with a loan. You're thrilled with that new car for the first, let's say, 3 to 6 months, but that thrill totally dies down. Maybe it coincides with the dying down of the new car smell, while the car payments stay the same. So that kind of gets a little bit annoying. You'll start going online to see the valuation of imperfect comparable home sales to justify your purchase. Two, you start to begin to accept your mistake. Between about 12 months to 24 months, you start realizing that maybe you didn't make the best purchase after all, and start telling yourself in the long run, things will be fine. And that's a way to make yourself feel better, of course. But the more you look at homes that sell for less, the more you beat yourself up in your mind about your purchase. You start doing calculations on how much you could have saved on the down payment or on the monthly cash flow if you had just been a little bit pickier or a little bit more patient, or just if you had listened to your favorite financial blogger. Ha, I don't know. You look at the nicer homes you could have bought with what you paid and you kick yourself a little bit. Finally, you tell yourself again, it's just money at the end of the day. Three, you start thinking about worst case scenarios. Due to leverage, a 10% decline in the value of your home is a 50% decline in your 20% down payment. Just as the stock market can correct 10% in a month, sometimes a day, the real estate market can easily correct 10% in a year. Now, once the momentum to sell begins in real estate, it starts getting scary. I gotta say it. It's very scary when nothing starts selling and all your money's tied up in your house and you don't have any liquidity. It's very scary, especially if you own in a condo in a large building, because you're at the mercy of every donkey who decides to foreclose or short sale or just can't deal with it. And during a worst case scenario, you start calculating how long you can keep the house before you run out of savings if you lose your job. You also calculate how low the house can go before it no longer makes sense to keep paying the mortgage. During the worst stage of a correction, you may really begin to freak out because you will know friends who have been laid off, and you're always going to wonder, are you next? Are you next? The chances are high. Yes, you're probably next. Four, you start to cut out all excess fat from your budget and make a change in your life. The greatest thing about being rational is that during difficult times, all extraneous expenses get slashed and savings rates go up. You might even try to get a second job or work a side hustle that you've been putting off for years and years and years if you really started to get worried. Fear of financial ruin in 2009 is what got me to finally start Financial Samurai, even though I came up with the idea in 2006. I needed a cathartic way to release my fear, and I wanted to connect with other people. Hey, I like to write, whatever, I thought this could be a good idea, why not? I needed to do something just in case. I was one of the thousands of people who got fired from the finance industry that year, and I clearly remember that year we were going through like our 7th or 8th or 9th round of layoffs after about 18 months. It was really quick, folks. When the downturn hits, companies lay off quick because the boss and the boss's boss are all fearful of their own jobs as well. So during the financial crisis, I didn't buy anything. I also hustled harder to build relationships with clients who were my only leverage to keeping my job. Instead of buying groceries and going out to eat with my own expense account, I took out my clients out for lunch and dinner to not only build better relationships with them, but yes, to save on food and beverages, and I took them out to entertain them at ball games or whatever, because I also wanted to get some getaway time as well. And yes, I do admit I took some leftovers home to feed my wife every single week, and we also ate much less. These are the rational things people tend to do when they're scared of losing all their money. And the great thing is, when the markets finally settled and started to rebound, I developed much closer relationships with my clients because they too were scared and they appreciated someone being there for them during dark days. And finally, you either stick with the game plan to pay your mortgage or you stick it to the bank. If things get really bad, where you're underwater in your home, you will need to make a crucial decision of either staying current or stop making payments. But before you stop making payments, first you must realize which states are non-recourse states, those states that don't come after you welch on your debt. For example, in California, if I welch on my mortgage, hey, they're not going to come after my other assets, so that's why you saw so many foreclosures and short sales in California. Very logical, but it hurts your neighbors who decide to keep on paying. If you decide to foreclose or do a short sale, then you simply lose 100% of your down payment and you hurt your credit score by the following, according to FICO. So if you're 30 days late on your mortgage, you'll lose 40 to 110 points on your credit score. 90 days late, it rises to 70 to 135 points. If you foreclose or short sale, your credit score will get hit by 85 to 160 points, and then if you go through bankruptcy, you're going to lose 130 to 240 points. Now, a foreclosure will be on your record for 7 years on average, plus 180 days from the last time the account was paid as agreed, and your credit score will gradually improve over these 7 years, but not fully until the foreclosure is off your record. Therefore, if you're planning on foreclosing or short selling, know that in 7 years, you're probably not going to get a mortgage. And if you finally do get one, you're going to be paying a higher interest rate. Now, that's your right to do whatever you want. Just know what the downsides are. Now, if you decide to keep paying your mortgage, then life goes on usually as planned. After all, real estate markets tend to recover over time, and few people go into buying the most expensive thing in their lifetimes without a long-term holding plan. You're just annoyed that you paid full price for something that went on sale just a day or a couple months later past the return policy. I really felt like a dummy buying my Lake Tahoe vacation condo 2 years later. I started thinking how nice it would be to have an extra $150,000 in cash sitting in the bank. I felt so bad about my decision that I decided to become super frugal for the next 5 years, work extra hours in order to get promoted and paid, and start Financial Samurai as a potential way out. And you know what? 11 years later, I'm at peace with my decision to buy a third property as a delusional 29-year-old who thought he couldn't lose. I also come to realize that if I didn't invest in that property, I probably would have sunk that money into the stock market, and the stock market went down about 40%. Now, since 11 years ago, valuations have rebounded from the depths of despair. The mortgage balance is about 40% lower. The value of the condo has shrunk to a small portion of my net worth, and prices have stabilized. So you know what? There was also satisfaction that I didn't welch on my debt. Now I just cannot wait. I can't wait to take my little boy up to play in the snow. I can't wait to show him how to jump in the lake during the summer off one of the public piers. I can't wait to roast marshmallows on an open fire after a rewarding hike. And I cannot wait to tell him fun stories about his old man and this podcast, perhaps, under the stars. So when his mother and I pass, I hope he has a family of his own to take up to the mountains one day. Maybe he'll even have a picture of his parents on the mantle, smiling and watching over him. Thanks so much, everybody, and hope you guys invest safely and wisely.